Hotline Washington. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, national security past and present. In this edition, we'll talk about the candy bombers. Historian Andre Cherney is with us to talk about the 60th anniversary of the pivotal Berlin airlift, how the U.S. and our ingenuity and some very unlikely heroes all came together to keep freedom alive in the capital of Germany. Also in this edition, the dire warning. British historian John Lucas is with us to talk about his latest book about Winston Churchill's first speech to Parliament, not one that was designed to puff up the British population, but to get them ready for a very tough fight ahead. Plus in this edition, Shadow World. State Department, Pentagon, and CIA veteran Robert Chandler is with us to talk about the emerging threats posed by the likes of Russia, Venezuela, China, and others, in addition to the war against Islamic extremism we face right now. And the devil we know. Former CIA officer Bob Baer is with us to talk about his new book, which suggests we're going to have to find some common ground with Iran. He'll explain where he thinks it might be found. All that, plus the day's top news, is still ahead on this edition of Dateline Washington. We begin with the candy bombers, and we begin right now. Many believe the military heroism of the World War II generation concluded with the surrender of Nazi Germany and subsequently Imperial Japan. But of course, the Cold War soon emerged, and the Soviet Union sought to place a stranglehold on Eastern Europe, including the city of Berlin. The USSR implemented a blockade in 1948 in an effort to starve West Berlin and force America to cede its sector of the city. But instead of giving in, the U.S. instituted the Berlin Airlift to keep West Berliners fed and cared for until the Soviets finally relented on the blockade. But how much do we know about this heroic moment in American history, and what lessons might be applicable today? My next guest in this edition is Andre Cherney, author of The Candy Bombers, The Untold Story of the Berlin Airlift, and America's Finest Hour. The book coincides with the 60th anniversary of the Berlin Airlift. And Andre, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
When the Soviets put the blockade in place in 1948, what was the immediate American reaction? Was the immediate reaction that there is a way around this blockade, or at first did the U.S. leaders feel that there's not much we could do?
It's very much the latter. You know, when that blockade first occurred, most people thought that you really just had three options at that point. You could either abandon the people in West Berlin and just retreat from there and hand the territory over to the Soviets. You could stand by and watch them steadily starve to death, or you could start World War III over it. And it didn't seem like there was any other options other than that. What we know now is the Berlin Airlift, and what a lot of people think they know of the story, really never was a big decision to be made. They decided to just start sending a few planes over to try to augment the rations just a little bit. And these were, of course, small, tiny 1948-era planes. They only had a few of them at their disposal. They were about the size of a school bus. And they did it for a couple days, and then they did it for a few more days, and it went on after that, and it lasted for an entire year, basically a modern miracle.
At what point did the Soviets decide that the blockade was just not useful anymore?
It took an entire year, at which point that the Soviets, who had thought they had this big move they were going to make on West Berlin, they were paying such a high price in propaganda, both by the world seeing them as the people who are starving the West Berliners, as well as the people seeing them as ineffectual because they could do nothing to stop these planes from coming in. And after a year, they basically cried uncle.
What was the level of danger for these planes, obviously flying over Soviet-controlled territory or Eastern Bloc territory into West Berlin? Did the Soviets make substantial threats of attacking the airlift or anything of that nature?
They made some allusions that they were going to do that. You know, all along the way, they were firing bullets at some of the planes. They would shine spotlights at the planes as they were taking off or landing. They would try to buzz the planes, fly their Yaks or MiG fighters right up against the planes and basically play chicken with these big transport planes that weren't very maneuverable. But they never did shoot one down, partially because one of the brilliant parts of the airlift, and of course nobody realizes when it was first starting, was that it put the ball in the Soviets' court. If we had, as some of the generals wanted to do, sent an armed convoy down the highway with food, then we would have had to fire the first shot as we broke through Soviet territory. With the airlift, it was up to the Soviets to fire a first shot, and they didn't want to do that.
As you mentioned, Andre, there was a dire need for supplies in West Berlin. The Soviets were planning, as we said, to starve it until the Americans relented and gave the territory over to the USSR. But in addition to the essentials comes the title of your book, The Candy Bombers, particularly one pilot who's still living, Hal Halvorsen. How did he get the idea to drop candy to the kids and boost morale in addition to bringing them supplies that they desperately needed?
You know, he was this ordinary 27-year-old pilot, always been a stickler for the rules, and one day he just happened to start speaking to some of the Berlin kids who were right at the fence of Tempelhof Air Base in Berlin, and he started talking to them and realized that if he had been able to drop just a few pieces of candy to them, these were kids who had never tasted chocolate, 6, 7, 8 years old, had never tasted a piece of gum, it would, as he said, put them on easy street and make them so excited and happy. So he promised to do that for them, and breaking the rules of this massive operation, he dropped candy to them in little handkerchief parachutes. And he did it once, he did it a couple more times after that, and eventually the word got out, and it became a sensation here in the United States. People flooded him with donations, and it was the moment, really, where the occupation of Germany, that in some ways had been floundering, turned around.
And Andre, it's interesting. You actually start the book with a very touching story of Berlin, the day of 9/11. Thousands of people gathered in the heart of the city to honor America and express their sympathies towards us. And one woman in particular is the focus of the story. Go ahead and tell that for our listeners and how nearly 60 years later, she was very, very moved by what our troops did many years ago.
Yeah, this was actually a friend of mine who's a journalist in Berlin told me this story, and it happened to him. As the listeners remember, of course, in the days after 9/11, there was big solidarity marches and protests all over the world of people standing with the United States. But one of the biggest, if not the biggest, happened in Berlin. It was a protest of hundreds of thousands of people, and it was a warm day, and there was this one elderly woman standing wearing a gray overcoat, and she was standing in this big mob of people, not walking, just standing still, and tears were rolling down her cheek. And my friend, who's an American, came up to her, but he speaks German. He said, what's going on? And she looked at him and said, you know, that she loves America. And she started to say, and he said, why? He said, you see, I was a girl during the airlift. And she started telling him her story. But the amazing thing is it's not just her. Hal Halvorsen, as you said, he's still alive. I went to Berlin with him. And now, 60 years later, these people in their 60s or early 70s come up to him with tears in their eyes day after day after day, saying how much this candy from America, this food that the airlift was bringing, meant to them. Not only the food, not only the candy, not only the calories and sustenance, which, of course, was important, but it was a sense of hope. These were, of course, the people who had survived World War II, survived the devastation afterwards, and the idea that people around the world cared enough about them to do something like this, believed in them, was inspirational to them as individuals and also as a country.
Andre, obviously, as you just mentioned, the memories are very real, very vivid for Germans old enough to remember the airlift, and I'm sure those stories of gratitude have been passed down to younger generations. What do you believe American generations should remember about the Berlin airlift more than anything?
Well, I think we should remember that this was a moment where we learned how to act as a country, when we learned how to combine our military might and our moral purpose. And it's also a story about individuals. You know, at the heart of this book is just a series of characters, and hopefully, above all else, it's just a good story. And it reminds us that ordinary people can have a big impact, that human kindness on an individual level, on a national level, can have ripples that go through history and have a big impact. And the things we do today can have a transformative effect on people around the world way into tomorrow.
You mentioned that the book is heavy on characters, and that's certainly the case. And it's interesting, then you pointed out right away, is that most of these characters are pretty much the last people you would expect to be in critical positions during an operation as delicate as this, from the general in Berlin to President Truman coming to that office by the death of FDR, to the pilot Hal Halvorsen and James Forrestal. What was the most fascinating part to you in figuring out exactly the roles that everyone played here?
Well, I think what you said is one of the things I learned during this that was so surprising to me, was that these are really history second stringers. You know, we think about World War II, and we think about FDR, who, of course, was such a great president and generals like Eisenhower and Omar Bradley, Patton, they were giants of their time. But the people who came in the years after them were seen as pale imitations. Harry Truman was seen as a president who just wasn't up to snuff, couldn't fill FDR's big shoes. General Lucius Clay, who you mentioned was the general in Germany, had been somebody who had been kept away from the battlefield. He was in charge of supplying the army, making sure they had enough tanks and pants and everything else an army needed. This pilot, Hal Halvorsen, had been a transport pilot, certainly not a great hero of the war, just flying on the outskirts of everything. But when it mattered most, these pretty ordinary people, in most respects, were able to rise above their limitations, and they all had foibles just like the rest of us, and that's pretty clear in the book. But they were able to rise above all that to really step up to the plate where it mattered and make a big impact.
Obviously, this requires great speculation, but had the United States not taken this effort, had we basically said, well, the Soviets have put us in a position where we simply can't hang on to our sector of Berlin, what would have been the impact of total Soviet control of the city?
Well, it does require some speculation, but back then people were pretty sure what it all meant. People in the U.S. as well as in Europe, they were pretty sure that as soon as Berlin fell into Soviet hands, people all over Europe would know that America wouldn't stand up for them. And they were, of course, scared of a Soviet invasion. These were people who just a few years earlier had been invaded by the Nazi armies. And so it's pretty certain that Germany, the rest of Germany, would have fallen to Soviet hands quickly. France and Italy were already teetering on the brink of communist takeover at the time. They would have probably fallen into Soviet hands. Who knows what would have happened next, if it would have been England or beyond. And we very well could be living in a very different world right now, certainly a Europe that wouldn't be the free democracy that it is now, but one that would be probably still under Soviet control. And we very well could have had World War III happen back in the 1940s.
Andre, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Andre Cherney is author of The Candy Bombers, The Untold Story of the Berlin Airlift, and America's Finest Hour. This is Dateline Washington. We'll be right back.